I determined that that could be, that the initial information on the Norton Sound Salmon Escapement Studies would be adequate.
Which other projects did you?
Okay, Kuskokwim Bay Salmon Tag and Recovery Program and the Yukon and Kuskokwim River Salmon Forecast Study. Those are both listed as low priorities by the department. What that means to me is they don't really want to do it, and they'll probably shift the money somewhere else.
Okay, yeah, I want to go ahead and take a break for lunch here.
So that reduces the total just by making those adjustments to $1,749,200.
How'd that make the total?
Here, let me just give you a copy of this.
And then we'll be back, she's in the administrative support, which is entirely the fair value where it happens.
That would be enough, yeah, or you did $500,000 for that. Okay, we're going to come back in at 1:30 and start with the justice budget on the nose at 1:30, and then if we get through with that in time, we'll come back to NIRMAC later this afternoon and make a determination as to whether or not anybody wants to work tonight.
I have a little problem with that one.
Committee, come to order, please. The NIRMAC budget will be suspended until we get back to it. We have an initial presentation by the subcommittee of the Administration of Justice budget, and it's my understanding that the subcommittee chairman would like to hear from the administrative director of the court system.
That's right, and Mr. Chairman, and anybody else that wants to bring forth testimony on any other committee, so we can take care of them first and we'll jump right into the budget, then, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Snowden, would you like to join us at the front table here? Pretty soon, you won't have to look at me. I'm going to have this stuff stacked up.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Mark Snowden, Administrative Director of the Alaska Court System, and I have with me Mr. Barrier, the Deputy Director of the Alaska Courts. As a basic overview of what we do, and to give you an idea of our function, but besides the budget, we have it within this past year had filed 143,000 cases within the Alaska court system. That is some idea of the scope of the litigation that takes place within the state of Alaska. Of those cases, over 140,000 were disposed. At the superior court level, there were almost 13,000 cases filed. These are the major cases that would come before the system. Of those, just about 12,000 cases were disposed. Often, our citizenry and our legislature is concerned especially with the criminal side of the activities within the state and focus on that, which is about 1/12 of the court load at the superior court level. There were approximately 900 felony cases filed out of the 13,000 total cases. There were about 800 dispositions. About 70% of those dispositions were by conviction of one at one stage or another. Of those cases, about 700 of those 780 cases were disposed of within 180 days. So there's no long lag in this state between what we talk about swift justice or slow justice. It seems that we move the cases through those systems very rapidly, the criminal cases, unless the defendant asks for a continuance and waives his 120-day rights. Since the ban on plea bargaining, it has been reported by the Judicial Council, and that ban took place in 1976, sentences have gone up approximately across the board from 50% to 80%. So I would say that the concept of leniency within the system is a misnomer. You hear about 12 cases a year where you might violently disagree with a disposition, but we're talking about 143,000 filings. We're talking about 900 felony cases, and I just want to make it clear to this committee that, you know, there's always a case where you're going to disagree with a disposition, but there's a tremendous volume that runs through the judicial branch of government.
Art, can I just ask a question out of some of those statistics you just mentioned?
Yes, sir.
Did you say that since plea bargaining was abolished, that sentences have increased in length by 50% to 80%?
That's about correct. Is that right, Ms. White, across the categories? The Judicial Council has done a study. There is a report available by the Judicial Council on that, and you could look at that category by category, and I would be more than happy to provide you with a copy of the study.
But you're suggesting that as a direct result of the elimination of plea bargaining,
yes, sir,
the length of sentences has gone up 50%.
Yes, sir. I am suggesting that before the elimination of plea bargaining, that sentencing was mainly done through negotiation between the defense attorneys and prosecutors, and those sentences were generally accepted by the judges because they were in a range that were acceptable. But when that responsibility was put solely on the judge and was not a part of a bargaining type of position, that sentences went up. And I'm sure sentences went up also as a result of the demand of society. I'm sure the judges felt that pressure, and they had that sole obligation and without recommendation from others. Yes, sir. That's exactly what I'm saying. Within the confines of this year's budget, we have asked for a budget which is approximately 6% above the continuation level. I think that's far below most of the budgets that have come before the legislature. Our continuation level is, I'll have to find the exact figures. Is $30,257,400.
Is that 30 million?
I mean 30 million, I'm sorry.
We need a little more than 30,000.
Our request, I don't have the right paper before me, but I circled one, that's why. And I'll find it momentarily. I know it's 31 million.
Well, the governor's adjusted request is 32,521.
That would be correct, and that would be 6%, approximately 6% above the continuation level of our budget for the present year. That is what we have requested from the legislature. We feel that type of budget is necessary for us to run an efficient operation for the upcoming year. Within that request, there has been a request for approximately 22 positions and different improvements within the system. We feel that most of these positions maintain us at a maintenance level. We talk about a traffic clerk for Anchorage. Well, traffic's been up 45% since 1976. We talk about a deputy coroner in Anchorage. There were 343 deaths that the Anchorage coroner handled last year. That is almost a death a day that we're handling, investigated deaths within the state. And I would suggest that at some point this legislature is going to have to look at adopting, like so many other states has, a coroner statute where we have a professional coroner in the state. But that will be something that will be brought up in another year. But I think these things are necessary. In places like Palmer, your non-traffic filings have increased by over 30%. So these types of positions, we think, are needed just to maintain the level of efficiency that we have right now, that are within the 6% increase. We feel them very, very important. We know the legislature is trying to be conservative, obviously, within the budgeting efforts. I've asked Mr. Berry to look through the budget carefully, and by the way, there were over 60 positions requested of the administrative office from the state courts around the state. And we pared that down and presented to the Supreme Court only 22. So we do believe we make a major effort to come before the legislature with efficient requests. After looking through the budget, we find that 16 positions, which we have listed, are absolutely necessary to keep us within a maintenance and an efficient workload level. There are another number of positions that could be deleted that we think would improve the system, but if the legislature doesn't have the money, if there are so many more important programs than the third branch of government and improving some of those operations that they have to cut them, that we would suggest that there are in Fairbanks an accounting clerk and a microfilm clerk that could be deleted. There's a law clerk in Anchorage that could be deleted. Intake officers in Juneau and Ketchikan, and a library assistant in Anchorage. We could delete those. That would amount to $187,000. But we think they're important. On the other side, and beside our improvements, which we think are necessary, and by the way, when we did our budget, judicial travel, postage, we budgeted at levels which are obviously below what has happened to us in the last month, or will continue it within our budget framework, we will be having to absorb greater costs. But we feel that we could not amortize $69,000 worth of equipment this year that we felt was necessary, but we could hold off on. And we have requested an increase in jury pay. The federal government now pays jurors $30 a day for jury duty, the state $20 a day. We have requested in this budget that we be put on a par with the federal jurors, that our jurors are providing us certainly an important function, that the cost of serving on juries is important, babysitters go up, loss of work, and so on and so forth, but that would cost this legislature $370,000. That could be put off to another year. So those total savings, if we gave those things up, would be $626,000. And that would mean our true increase over the continuation level would only be 3.7%. We think that's a very tight budget, and it's going to be very difficult to operate effectively without these types of positions, without these types of increases within our budget. Mr. Berry or I can answer any specific questions the committee members might have for us.
Well, I just make one general statement. That's you're suggesting that if we found that we didn't have enough money, or if we found that other programs were more demanding or even of a higher caliber of need, that you could understand why we'd have to not allow such an increase. Well, obviously that's not the case, but many of us feel that there is a need to enforce and discipline ourselves and really not let the budget just grow to whatever amount of money we have. And so in response to that remark, that's what I'd have to say. We obviously do have the money, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're required to spend it on operating expenses.
Mr. Chairman, we would agree with that. All I am suggesting is that we think our request is a minimal request. It's 6% over continuation. We think that with your own reports that, for example, this body, the House Finance Committee, did its own study of the court system just 2 years ago and found us to be probably the most efficient entity in its operating procedures in the state. The Legislative Budget and Audit Committee has commented that our procedures and our operation is as efficient as any in the state. A special audit was done of our transcription system last year by a request of a member of the legislature, and Budget and Audit found out that the use of this system, which is tremendously effective and efficient, saves the state $800,000 a year over the use of live court reporters. So I'm suggesting that we are running efficiently, that there is not a lot of fat in our budget, that we're asking for only a 6% increase over continuation, and to cut us very much below that would seriously impair the operations of the judicial branch of government.
Members, do you have questions for Mr. Snowden?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Freeman.
Who came up with the continuation figures and how valid are they?
Mr. Chairman, I was responsible for preparing the detailed budget. The continuation level budget is developed, or was developed, according to the prescriptions of the budget manual presented or prepared by the Division of Budget Management in the executive branch. Continuation level includes, by definition, and it is in our budget,
the identical resources as we presently have today interpreted in terms of the cost of them for next year. So it includes the current positions, the current rents, the current travel, the current commodities, with inflation figured at 8% on most items, except for travel, that was figured at 12%. Only exception to those guidelines was, I think, library books. We computed at 15% because historically they've been going up that fast, and we can justify that increase on library books. Other than that, attenuation level has absolutely nothing in it that is not strictly the inflation. The reason the continuation level is approximately 29% higher than our current year authorization is as follows. The salary increases enacted last year by the legislature, which are picked up in this budget, which recover actually 2 years of raises since the budget was last introduced, amount to $3,865,500. The other increase that is of a similar nature is the actuarial judicial retirement program, which was also enacted last year, and it shows up in this year's budget as the first year of funding, amounts to $2,679,200. Those two items are by legislative mandate and do not increase the resources to the court. They add up to $6,544,700, which is a 28.5% increase over our current budget. That leaves us a five-tenths of 1% increase at the continuation level over our current budget, and other than the $6 million of personnel and retirement. Our net increase is $136,600. In other words, if we did not have the pay raises, did not have the actuarial retirement program, our budget that we came in at continuation would be $136,600 than the budget we have today. So that's why I feel there's not
shut the door.
There's not a lot of there's not a lot of fat. There's not a lot of extra things pumped in. We haven't pumped new positions or extra travel or extra anything in there. It's a relatively tight figure, and we've asked for, I'd say, 0.5% over what we presently have for next year, in counting all the inflation and everything else we have to absorb.
At the
continuation level. I don't think it's an unreasonable figure to deal with. It's not like the old maintenance level we used to have 3 or 4 years ago that allowed for a certain amount of new positions and additional travel, whatever, for increased caseloads or increased whatever. It's strictly a inflationary factor. And I believe, well, I'll stand by it, that whatever's in there is an accurate figure, and that the 0.5 of 1% is a true increase in our budget at the continuation level. So if you add in the addition level, even the whole addition level, you're looking at 6.5% increase over our current budget, which is not, we feel, that inflationary for the state coffers. Granted, the total increase is 35%, or 36% at general fund, but again, we have no control over those salary increases or the retirement program. So we don't see how. Anyway, that's our position. That's the numbers, and I'll be glad to answer any specific questions on the continuation, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I know I'm not going to quarrel with you on that, but there are certain facts that's, I think, are pretty obvious, and one of them is that, at least with my calculator, that the figure the House come in and recommended is 15% over what you had last year, and again, my figure set looks to me to be about $15 million. Am I doing something wrong here?
I think so. $15 million?
Your total expenditures. Last year authorized, 1006.
No, that's everything. That includes public safety.
Oh, that's the whole thing. All right. You're just talking about the court system, right? You're not talking about the whole category.
That's great.
The court system last year without the judicial counsel with the qualifications was about $8 million over last year. So 23 and 31.
So.
Right.
Well,
that's even worse.
Oh, it is. As I stated, it's 35. It's at the continuation level is approximately $6,800,000 increase.
What we're suggesting, Mr. Chairman, is that at that level, the legislature approved pay raises for all employees of the state. That does not give us any additional resources. That just pumps that money in to pay for those pay raises. And the legislature also mandated that the judicial retirement be actuarially funded, and that we put money, specific amounts, within our budget to do that. That gives us absolutely no resources additional beyond what we had. We're just complying with those two enactments followed by the legislature. Beyond that, 0.5%, 0.5%, was put in for inflation.
The net cost, right?
The net cost. And beyond that, we are asking for a true increase of 6% in resources above the continuation level.
Okay, up continuation level. The continuation level is about $6.5 million over last year.
Right, $6.8 million roughly.
Okay, how much of that is due to legislative action on retirement and on salaries?
All of it. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. The increase is $6,681,000. Of that, $6,544,000 is because of legislative action.
You don't have any discretion over it.
Absolutely not.
What are those numbers again? I'm sorry. $6,681,000 is the amount of increase at continuation level.
All right, that's the amount.
All right, $6,544,000 is the cost of the salary increases and judicial retirement.
That works out to about 98% then of your increases,
right,
due to the salary increase and judicial retirement. Is there any other way to do the judicial retirement?
Not according to the statute. We have simply followed the direction of the executive branch, again, who have had their own actuaries work on the percentages and whatever. We've just budgeted according to what they've told. All that money will go to the payroll people, and it'll go into retirement fund. So whether the percentage is right, we can't say. We're simply taking their figure and budgeting it.
Chairman, it does seem like a fairly substantial amount, but by constitution we couldn't reduce that amount anyway, so I let it go.
But all we were trying to say, Mr. Chairman, is that both of those things, the pay raise was passed for everyone, and the legislature passed, but said the actuary retirement shall be there, and we had to put that in. It gave us no resources whatsoever. It's just like having our old budget and passing that through, and what we've asked for beyond our old budget specifically is a 6% increase over continuation level, which is our old budget plus these things put in, and that's what we've asked for.
There were several of us here last year and year before, and we realized the history of the retirement and the salary, but I'm a little resentful of the fact that if you're laying that complete responsibility upon the legislator, because I suspect that there was no stronger lobbyist group in the whole state than when that was lobbied for. So I want that made with
firm. There certainly was not representative of the government.
You guys talk for 10 minutes. I can take some of the
people talk.
Did you sit there and point the finger at us as if that was our fault? Now, if you really are ashamed of that, or you think that's too high, I would entertain or make the motion to reduce that to you if you're bothered about it. But don't sit there and say that was a legislative edict. No one was lobbied any stronger than we were on that salary raise.
We appreciate those salary raises. We think they're much needed. We appreciate the actuarial soundness of the retirement system now. But what we're only saying, Representative Montgomery, is that while we ask for them and we think that they were necessary, and while they're tremendously appreciated by the judicial branch as well as the executive and legislative branches, I'm sure, that they adding them into our budget do not add any resources into our budget whatsoever. We are still operating at the same level we did last year, and what we are truly asking this legislature is taking our last year's budget plus these things that had to be put in, which we certainly appreciate, and asking for 6% true increase above that to run the judicial branch of government, which comes to $1,700,000 approximately that we're asking in new additional funds for positions and for programs that we think are necessary.
You know, guys are always in trouble when guys debate a lawyer. But I still like to ask the question. I understand the unfunded liability, but does the statute demand that must be met in 1 year?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask your response.
It has to be done here.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that
No, it's not being done in 1 year. It's the percentage that they've computed, which is a high percentage of salaries, is based on the total unfunded liability. And you will see this next year. We'll have a comparable figure at the continuation level for several years until the fund is caught up. It's
well,
not.
How was that derived? The catch up to make that a.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure. I cannot speak to how the executive branch is managing the retirement system, and they're figuring out the method of computing the pay-in.
To why was it put in this year rather than last year, a year before?
This is the first year. July 1 is the effective date, as far as I can gather.
The retirement benefits were available before July 1.
This is the actuarial funding of them. Prior to this year, the Alaska court system, in by statute, has budgeted general funds to pay actual retirement benefits. So that, for example, I think we're paying maybe $400,000 a year of general fund money to the retired judges. And what the statute did is just change that to where there's no longer general funds specifically budgeted for that, but rather a retirement fund so that there is something to cover that.
I well understand the deficit and the way it worked and right. Why the vacancy was there, and I approve of this. It should have been done previously.
Right, it should have been a setup that way initially.
But I questioned how much of it was done this year, and if it has to be done all in one stroke. We know the 50 judges are not going to all retire in 1 year,
right.
And if they'd done that previously, it would have been done by appropriation.
Right.
But the other retirement agencies contribute, and there is a fund, and it's basically a viable working deal. But I mean, you have to play catch up. How much is that thing in the red? About $14 to $15 million.
It could be.
Right.
I'm sure.
That's what we're looking
sure.
at. We're like.
Well, and that's what I know. How much did you budget this year to start taking it off?
Approximately $3 million.
So is that a 5-year plan then, do you think, or 6-year plan?
I would assume so. Again, I have not talked to the retirement section in the executive branch to see how they computed that. And we could certainly ask them to get the information. But
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
What's it look like for next year?
Looks like that any salary increases that the workers negotiate in August with the contracts are up would be... Well, that wouldn't be in our next year's budget. That wouldn't show.
Next
year you'd have the retirement
next
show.
Year, the next year budget, assuming
let's
that...
Let's get together.
Excuse me.
Right. Next year's budget should be, will not have a salary increase in it because it will not be negotiated until after we compute our salary, I assume. Unless the budget people ask us to crank in some factor, which they can do. We'll follow whatever the executive branch does. Retirement next year should be approximately equal to what it is this year.
Which is how much is that now?
$2,679,200 is the percentage taken out of payroll that goes to the retirement program. I assume that will be the same next year. If the actuary,
what percentage of payroll is that?
It's approximately 96%.
No, I mean, how much of the payroll?
Oh.
How much of the payroll is the retirement?
How much of the judicial payroll?
And so that would be about 15%.
15%. What is it with the rest of the state government?
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, this is they are trying to catch up on a fund that's not existed for 20 years, so they're trying to catch up the liability. I don't think you can compare the ongoing cost of the system would be much less than that, I believe. But
how long will it take to get caught up?
Again, I don't know. I haven't talked to retirement people to see how they structure the program. I'll be glad to check with them.
Be interested to know when you're going to get caught up. It seems like a pretty significant amount of money every year. So aside from that, you expect another $2 million. Well, that's, I'm talking about now, I want you to compare the approximately $30 million figures. Well, the governor's asked us for $32 million essentially for the court system, not counting the judicial council.
Right.
So, is that going to be $2 million in addition to that?
No.
Okay, so just figure out $32 million plus even say 10% inflation, so that'd be 3.2. So you're talking about $35 million. And then if you went a 6% above that, it'd be another $2 million. So you might come in here
if you were asking for another 6% increase next year, you go from about 32 to 37, as opposed to 24 or 23 last year to 32 this year. Does that sound about right?
No, it would be considerably less, because approximately 70% of our budget is personnel. So that factor would not inflate next year if we do not have a pay raise figured in.
I'm just, you know, it's just starting to bother me tremendously, not just with you, your outfit, but everybody else saying that they can't get by without 30 or 40% or 20 to 40%, so somewhere in that range. And if we've got to do that again next year and the following year, it's not going to be long before we're going to be in pretty deep.
I believe that the true cost next year will be, see, again, this is quite high because you have 2 years of pay raises, which amounted to approximately, looks like
38.65.
I'm just trying to think, that'd probably be 20 some odd percent total, okay, over the 2 years. That was a $3.8 million. Well, next year there'll be, when we budget, there should be 1 year's, in the year after next, there'll be, well, I take it back. 2 years from now, we'll have a similar situation, because if they negotiate a 2 year contract, next year we'll budget no increase in salary, and then 2 years later we'll budget for the increase of January of 82, plus, if it's a known factor, the January 83 figure. So you see, this year there's no supplemental payroll bill through, because we've got it in our budget for next fiscal year. So I think you'll see that if it's a 2 year negotiation, we'll come in every 2 years with a double big personnel budget. And that's, you're going to see that real increase built in. But other than that, the remaining $9 million of our budget, or $10 million, or whatever it might be, $11 million, whatever the fact figure is, most of that would go up at approximately, let's say, 10%. So you're looking at roughly $1 million, $1.5 million, let's say, next year for continuation, and then beyond that, perhaps again another $1 million to $2 million of addition. So if we receive $32 million this year, next year our budget should be no higher than $35 million that would be submitted to legislature, without counting the pay raise that would have to be budgeted separately or whatever through the executive branch. I mean, that's what our budget would be this year. I mean, if it weren't for all this stuff, our current budget is $23,576. We'd be asking you know, again for $26 million. If it were not for the $6.5 million of the pay raise and the judicial retirement. Judicial retirement will not go up. I mean, that base will stay the same for at least the next few years. It won't go up any higher.
Have you guys actually done any projections like that, though? I mean, suppose you got your $50 million worth of capital money that you wanted to put these new buildings in, and you'd have, I mean, it just seems like you got a plan there for several years ahead of time as far as the capital plan. I just wonder how far in advance you planned for operating expenses.
Well, the operating expenses are hard to plan, Mr. Chairman, because case filings in some areas, I think, are starting to fall in this state. And you won't see personnel additions unless, obviously, the intense needs grows. It is also my personal opinion that this state should make much better use of computers and those types of aid that are not as labor-intensive as present needs, and don't get sick and don't get pay raises and things like that, and that we should be looking at a combined statewide plan for computerization and modernization, and including the courts. But the personnel that we requested generally is very much dependent on the increase in filings and things like that, because the judiciary is by necessity labor dependent. We're talking about dealing with other people. We're talking about judges and magistrates and clerks accepting papers, and we are probably the most far-flung organization in the state, because we have magistrates all over in 60 locations all over rural Alaska. This is the first year, by the way, since statehood, that I can tell you that no magistrate is working off their kitchen table, that we've been able to rent space in communities so magistrates, there can be the dignity of court, that magistrates don't have to work off their kitchen table. The judiciary is not always swimming in money, but we are far flung. Justice has to be close by in all parts of this state, and we are labor intensive as an organization.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this situation, if I've got something
not accurate, somebody stop me, you stop me, or Al stops me, or Art, but based on the changes in law last year, and granted that we could perhaps put more or less money into retirement fund, perhaps, but based basically on the changes in law last year and putting the figure recommended for the retirement in, that the number that we have here for the continuation level, which is roughly equivalent to the number that is the subcommittee recommendation, is due to the changes in the law and for salaries and retirement from last year. That brings us up to continuation. Then you know, somebody should stop me if that's not right there. I mean, we could arbitrarily raise or lower maybe the amount of money we put into retirement this year, figuring to put in less next year, put in more next year, something like that. Okay, then beyond that, there in the information that was submitted by the court system, they had something like two other areas in the actual increase. One was an increase that they recommended to keep pace with the expanded workload. I think there was something 14 positions they estimated were required to keep up with the workload that had grown. And beyond that, then they had things that would be in effect like new items in the budget, such as the increase in juror pay. But we've got like three sort of levels or categories that we can get into. A continuation level we can adjust up or down apparently based on retirement. We've got a continuation plus some number, maybe arguable, for the workload changes, increases, and then we have things that are actually new, sort of like new items in the court budget. The increase in travel to smaller communities, increases in attorney's fees, increases in juror pay.
You're recommending,
because either in your opinion, they haven't kept pace, or that by spending this money, their overall efficiencies would be incurred.
Right. That's
correct. Okay. You're agreeing with that. I don't know if anybody else is agreeing with that. Because nobody's arguing with it. Then, what I would like to do is if we've got the argument surrounding continuation level funding nailed down, would be to move to what you think might be required for what you see as workload increases, that is, in order to provide the same level of service, say, on a case-by-case basis with the increased work that has been occurring. If you could offer comments on that.
We could. In fact, this we first wrote a letter to Representative Adams on this, and I talked to Mr. Berry since that time, and have asked him to adjust in two areas, and he has provided me with a memorandum on this, which possibly could be Xerox for the committee, and which just shows all positions, and the new position, and why we think that they need them. It shows beyond that, the travel, the recording, and those other areas, and what we think are needed, and what we think are additions, and possibly the committee could, at least at their leisure, take a look at those items and our justifications and so on.
I think the subcommittee members have copies of that earlier memo that Mr. Berrier provided.
Of which you received one, Mr.
Yeah, I've got one here. So I think that's basically the same information. Maybe this is...
It is within two positions of the same information. Like when Mr. Berry suggested the 14 positions, I suggested the two more that were mandatory.
Oh, what were they?
One was a revisor of rules. As you know, the legislature has a revisor of statutes and has had for many years, and it's necessary. We have now four volumes of rules that govern all procedure within the Alaska court system, from administrative to civil to criminal, that must
be... That's a rules revisor. What was the other position?
What was the new other one that we had added? We're from the 14. Because we do have 16 in. Can you pick it up?
The a law clerk in Nome.
Okay.
I think they had an updated one of that. That one law clerk in Nome that was added would be serving two Superior Court judges, one in Nome and one in Kotzebue. That's why it was added, because of those two Superior Court positions in that area.
Okay, Mr. Chairman? If it's agreeable, what I would like to ask is about the costs that are recommended by the court system to account for workload increases. There basically consists of a number of positions, most of them in Anchorage and Fairbanks, I think others in some other locations throughout the state, but I know there's been some comment on it but that maybe it's covered in this later letter that you're talking about. Maybe you don't need to elaborate on it.
Well, we say things like this that possibly would be helpful to the committee. I'll just read you one of the items that Mr. Barrier said. Anchorage, traffic clerk. Traffic case filings in Anchorage have increased 45% since 1976, with a present filing rate of nearly 50,000 cases a year. Because of the lack of staff, the public has had to wait in the hall to pay their fines, driver records are not updated in a timely and accurate fashion, and there have been errors on too many occasions, resulting in arrest warrants being issued falsely. We've been sued three times in the last year for issuing an arrest warrant after somebody's paid their ticket because it hasn't been inputted. We think that type of position is necessary to help the public and to keep us up. Those are the types of things that we talk about within those levels, and that's how Mr. Barrier has explained these positions to me. And as I said, I would be glad to supply this memorandum to the committee and have it look through them and question these things. And our annual report will be out next week when the Chief Justice gives the State of the Judiciary. I have one of the first copies, and you can look through the annual report to look at the numbers of cases, statistics, how they're spread across the state, and that might help the committee in its deliberations.
And then of the portions of the budget that are actually increases in the level of service, I think the biggest single item there were, again, a certain number of new positions that you had requested in the budget. And how do you see that those positions are going to improve the performance of the court system? The reason I'm trying to bring out information is to try to put it into chunks so that the committee can make a decision on it that kind of basis rather than...
Well, for example, sir, we've asked for a new library assistant in Anchorage. The state court system runs the only law libraries in the state of Alaska. You know, we don't have a law school. There is no really other source of legal research other than the judicial branch of government, which is fairly unique in this country. There are not many states where that is true, because most states have law schools and other major sources of law materials.
we have, our small claims case areas have grown rapidly over the years since this legislature has enacted small claims and increased the amount. Numbers of people come in pro per without attorneys and ask for help within our library system. And we think it would be an improvement to have an extra assistant in there helping these people who are not attorneys find the proper books and research and the types of things they want to do. We think that would improve our service. It's not necessary to maintain our service. We've asked for an extra microfilm clerk because we think, you know, if we can get these things microfilmed more quickly, we won't be passing as much paper out across the counter. We can put people over on the microfilm scanners and look at them that way, and we'll be wasting less time in Xeroxing and other things to people who are asking for documents. We think that would improve our service. We've asked for intake officers because we think there's a juvenile problem in this state. Right now it's handled by parole and probation, but we think that would benefit and add to the service in Juneau and Ketchikan if we had intake officers. They are not necessary to maintain the present level of our abilities within the district. Those are the type of positions we've asked for to add or improve. On our other improvements, the two major areas that we've asked for basically an amortization of $69,000 in equipment, which we think is obsolete, but we can hold on to it and do it later. And we think it would have been an improvement to be able to get rid of this and have, you know, file drawers and open doors and an arm bent and those types of things in certain areas. And we've asked for an increase in juror pay, while only $10 per juror, which comes out to a large amount of money, $370,000 it will cost the state to provide jurors with a $10 a day increase for juror service. They get $20 a day, Mr. Chairman. The federal government pays jurors $30 a day. I think our last increase in juror pay was approximately 4 to 5 years ago. I think inflation and so on and so forth and the cost of babysitting and other things have gone up where it is a tremendous burden on our citizens. As you know, we do have a bill in to knock out for their parking and spending the day at the courthouse and their babysitting and their other charges. And we think the federal government pays it. We thought it would be a good idea. It's an improvement. It's not a necessary item.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I got one more question, and it doesn't relate to the operating budget. It relates to a change that was made, I think, last year in the law. And I didn't necessarily see anything in this budget that reflected it. And the question is that the authority for the construction and maintenance of the court facilities was by law clearly granted the court system last year. And the question is how's that working out? And I'm not asking for something to be stuck in the budget to represent that transfer, but in one way, I was a little surprised it didn't show up there. So how's that being handled?
Mr. Chairman, it was in the budget last year in a sense. We asked for capital funds. All it means is we're administering them. I don't believe we have had one project that you have budgeted for us that has come in over budget. We stayed within the budget figures requested. I think that's a pleasant change from what happened when we were governed by the executive branch. Like, for example, on the Kotzebue Courthouse, we were given a number, and we had to come in the very next year and ask for almost twice that amount to finish a building.
Here's the question I have on it. I understand that most of the things that's necessary to do on a project, maybe all the things necessary on a project, can be paid for out of project funds, and that's the way it should be, project budget. But once you go past a certain point in level operations, then it requires some sort of coordination and tracking the projects in an agency. How do you carry that out?
Mr. Chairman, our policy so far and our plan for the future is it's sort of a combined court and DOT effort where they've worked very closely with us on our projects, and as we get into larger projects, well, I think we'll work, even spend more time on them. We've contracted with DOT to assist us on project review, plan review, or project maintenance or project supervision, that type of thing. I just met last week. Our committee was meeting to try to select an architect to work on some of the remodeling projects in the state. We met with one of the DOT men in that section and our staff, and we went over the proposals, and this week we'll be selecting an architect to work. Our plan is, internally, we will oversee the project to the extent that we establish priorities of what would be done. We will set the amounts that we want to spend, basically what the project is, and oversee the general management of the project, but we'll generally, I think, contract with DOT to do the on-site project management rather than trying to build up our own staff and people to go out and watch the sticks and stones going up. Because as we said the last year, we did not plan to develop a large staff because we don't plan on having a large number of projects at any one time. It's taken us a little bit to get going on some of the projects this year because we're trying to do it right so that we don't have problems with the architects and others to get into the system. So I think we've worked out a system that will work well both now and for the future, and I think we're going to be moving very smoothly in these projects from this point forward. We'll be underway on this next. We did a couple of projects last summer with architects who are already on contract basically with DOT doing the work. We'll now be beginning the next round of work in the Anchorage Court building and the Kenai Court probably starting next week when we select the architect. We expect to have those underway this summer and completed by the fall. So I think you'll see that we should be able to do it, I think, fairly effectively now we've got our system worked out internally and our procedures that will comply with DOT regs, but yet
within budget,
but they apply with their regs, but still enough flexibility to make them work. So at this point, I think we're going to be doing okay, and I don't expect to be putting in more review people or management people in the budget.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This is a request on a little different subject. Last year, I tried to get a Superior Court judge for Palmer.
Yes, sir.
And you said that this was here to do it. Is that involved here at all?
Representative Charney, we have not asked for a district court judge in Palmer, a superior court judge in Palmer. What I said is last year we were going to get the two new judges for Palmer, and we'd want to try them out to see if they could take care of the need. I just finished talking with the troopers and so on and so forth, and I thought the service was fine at this point. I've talked to Senator Kurtula, who said that he thought some of the pressure was off. If the case rises, is at a level at that point that you think a judge is needed and you put in a bill, we would certainly review that very closely. And if those numbers and the annual report will be out this coming week, would support it, we would support that concept. But at this point, we don't think the citizens of Palmer, we think that the attorneys had a real problem because, as you remember, we had a crisis in Anchorage, which this legislature helped take care of. And we had to use our resources there in an intensive way. In fact, as we brought in judges from all over the state in a crash program to take care of that Anchorage backlog. And now that we have substantially cut down on that backlog and through the largesse of this legislature and the help that they gave us, and we have been able to supply at time certain judges in Palmer to take care of those cases, and as far as I know, the bar is happy with what is happening.
And the judges come to Palmer and hold.
Yes. That is correct.
Have to go to Anchorage.
That is correct.
I hadn't checked that out, but I remember last year you told me that you would be in favor of it.
But it would seem that the bar is not upset at this point, and their work is getting done. And as Palmer grows, there's no doubt that the Matanuska Valley is growing. I don't doubt that, and I don't want to kid this legislature. As time goes on, a judge will be needed resident in the Matanuska Valley.
I haven't checked this out in detail, but I did call the Bar Association and got back an affirmative answer on the phone that they did think we still needed a judge in Palmer. And I don't quite think that, but I'll have to check and see if you're right.
Would you check and see that if they have been getting that service on an automatic basis? Because our Superior Court has promised that, and they said they have been providing that, and they haven't had near the complaints. Every community would certainly like to have its own resident judge, and we certainly understand that. And as I said, I agree in time, the Matanuska Valley is one of the faster-growing parts of the state, that it will need one. But it would seem that although they might like their own resident judge right now with the numbers and the justifications that they are getting adequate service and they are not in the crisis situation that they were in when they couldn't get a judge because of the Anchorage problems that we had.
No, that's it for, is that all you have?
That's all we have. We thank the committee for taking the time to hear us, and if there's any further questions the committee might have in the future, we would either be glad to answer them orally or through written answers to, for example, we were asked by Representative Montgomery about the what retirement is going to do on that actuarial. Would you like us to contact retirement and get their five-year figure or six-year figure?
That's all right, Art. I appreciate your... I just questioned if it had to be phased in that rapid resolve.
It's just that they passed through to us a number and we put it in our budget, and that's how it did happen. Thank you very, very much for your time.
One question here, and I couldn't remember the number. Is the there was an increase item for attorneys and other professional costs,
mm-hmm.
and it was a statement in letter that was given to the subcommittee on, I think it states that the hourly rate for attorneys has not been increased for several years, and I didn't look that up. What is the hourly rate for attorneys appointed by the court now?
$40.
Thank you.
Pretty low.
First and about. Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Chairman, Terry White with the Judicial Council would like to speak to the group at this time. It's on line 170. It's where I cut their budget by 50%, and I would like her to give an opportunity to come up and talk to the group.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Terry White, Executive Director of the Alaska Judicial Council, and I appreciate the opportunity to discuss the Judicial Council's research program for FY82. Basically, what I've submitted this year has been a continuation budget. The budget divides about half and half into the funds that we use for judicial selection and evaluation purposes, and about half into our research work. And I've provided a memo. I don't know if members of the committee have it. If they don't, I'll make sure that they get it addressed to Senators Stimson and Sturgiluski, which describes our research in some detail. Basically, what we're talking about are two studies, one on felonies and one on misdemeanors. Both of them requested by the Supreme Court, and continuation of studies that were started with funds from the legislature last year. The felony study is to collect data on the 800 dispositions that Art was mentioning for 1980 and a few 1981 felony cases. Our emphasis is twofold, one on continuing to monitor disparities in sentencing. As you know, our last study, which was funded by the legislature in 1979, found that most disparities due to race had disappeared, with the exception of black drug cases in the urban areas and native property cases in rural areas. In both of those instances, there are still unusually high sentences for those groups of people. The purpose is to monitor felony sentencing patterns to make sure that disparities continue to be reduced through the various projects the court system and other agencies have instituted. A second purpose for this year's study is to monitor the effects of the new criminal code on felony cases, and also to turn up any other points that might be of interest. For example, We've already seen in the process of our data collection that there are some pretty dramatic shifts in filings of cases. Kenai this year has 92 felony cases for us to study, which is about double its caseload for last year. Anchorage seems to have a somewhat lower caseload. Fairbanks is about the same. In other areas, there are pretty significant increases. We also see a different pattern of prosecutions, especially in Anchorage, which may or may not be due to the new criminal code, but the legislature would definitely be interested in knowing these effects and other effects of the new criminal code. Our second study on misdemeanors is one that follows up a study done on 1974 to 76 misdemeanor cases, where again we found very significant racial disparities, in fact, bigger disparities than we did for felony cases during that same period of time. And another misdemeanor study hasn't been done since that time. We've just finished working out the procedures for collecting the data, and we'll also collect data on misdemeanors in rural areas, which hadn't been done under the earlier study, which was funded with federal money. Again, the same types of questions need to be answered. Are disparities continuing in the urban areas where we found them before? Are there disparities in rural areas which we hadn't had the opportunity to study? What's the effect of the new criminal code? What's the difference between sentences imposed for state misdemeanors as compared to those imposed for municipal misdemeanors? And what significant differences, if any, appear between urban and rural prosecutions and sentencings of misdemeanors? In addition to that, our last study and the current studies provide the legislature and other groups with a variety of information which is used in different ways. We've been collecting data on alcohol use and its association with crime. We find that it's very striking indeed, and as the Violent Crimes Task Force from the House heard, something like 80% of crime probably is associated with alcohol. Our data begins to show that as a hard fact, plus it begins to isolate what types of crimes it's most prevalent in. And our last felony study, we found that alcohol was most significantly associated with violent crimes rather than any other type of crime. It also gives the legislature and the court a handle on what types of alternatives are being imposed by judges, what types of rehabilitation procedures are being used by judges to help reduce this problem, and so forth. The total amounts that we're talking about for the two different studies are for the felony study. To complete the work that we've done this year with our FY81 funding, to complete that work in FY82 and have a report to the legislature by approximately March 1st of next year will be $78,348. And to complete the work on the misdemeanor study, since we have most of our data collection ahead of us on that, will be approximately $109,283. I also have some points I wanted to make about our overall budget submission. As I mentioned, we did submit a continuation budget only. We did not ask for any additional funds, and we did not ask for any new positions. The total dollar amount of increase over last year's budget is $37,500. That's a 9% increase. Within each budget category, the increases vary. For personal services, it's about 10% due to salary increases and so forth. For travel, it's about 12%. On travel, our request for FY81 was a 10% increase, and our travel costs have actually increased by 30 to 40%. For FY82, we're asking for a 12% continuation increase for inflation, and we expect that the 30 to 40% increase is going to continue, so that in effect our budget requests for both this year and last year have been kind of self-restricting. They are have their own built-in budget cuts because the cost of travel keep increasing more than our budget request. The same thing holds true in our contractual budget, where our rent costs will increase significantly next year, but rather than increasing our request to account for that, we're reducing our long-distance phone call budget, we're reducing our printing budget. We bought a less expensive word processing system. All of those different types of savings are going into making up for the increase in rental costs, so that our budget has been prepared to be self-limiting, to take into account the legislature's concerns for not overly increasing the operating expenses of each agency. So our total budget request for research specifically amounts to about $187,000. And that leaves a difference of $17,700 to bring us up to our full request of $470,000 for our continuation budget. That difference, that 17.7, primarily goes into reports, assistance to the public, providing information to various groups, and some small amount of our work on judicial selection. So in addition to making the point that our research is extremely valuable, has been used by the legislature and the courts in a number of ways throughout the years, I would also like to ask that this committee fund us at our full continuation level, given the consideration that we have given as an agency to keeping our budget requests very low this year.
How many, other than the appointed members, how many employees did Judicial Council have on board at present?
We have 5 full-time employees.
5 full-time employees.
Right.
Question number 2. At present, what services or studies are mandated by the legislature for Judicial Council to perform? Duties assigned by law, legislative.
Okay, our statutory, our constitutional functions.
I know about the Constitution. Okay. Tell me about the other one.
The only specific statute that requires us to do anything is the one that requires us to evaluate judges who are standing for retention elections. Okay, in our FY81 budget, the legislature asked us to monitor 1980 felony sentences. So if, in that sense, that study is mandated by the legislature, then that's what we're doing.
By statute, resolution?
Not by statute, no.
So there's a budget item in the FY80 budget?
In the FY81 budget, yes.
The FY81 budget, the legislature gave some money to do a specific study.
Right.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the reason I asked that question, you may have heard me do this one, but I once served some time on the Judicial Council.
You were a member of the Judicial Council?
I was, actually.
I'd say you probably are arrested next week.
All right. Assigned the Judicial Council duties that's laid out under the Missouri plan as far as selection of judges, additional duties by constitutional mandate is Judicial Council should conduct studies for improvement in administration of justice, make reports and recommendations to the Supreme Court and to the legislature at intervals of not more than 2 years. The Judicial Council shall perform other duties assigned by law. Mr. Chairman, when I came off the Judicial Council in 1972, last year I was on the Judicial Council, their budget was about $35,000, and the request was to me as a newly elected legislator to make an effort to get another $35,000 in the budget so that they could hire a full-time administrator. The judge's law clerk, Chief Justice's law clerk, had been doing it on a part-time basis up to that time. And in the last 9 years,
and they thought that was pretty good. We got clear up to $67,000. Last 9 years, 9 years later, we're talking about $470,000 with five full employees. And as far as I know, I don't think that they're doing all that much, providing all that much service or performing that much more service than they did 10 years ago. If I'm wrong, I'd like to see it, but I don't see it as far as the additional duties that's been assigned to them as the Constitution requires by the legislature. I suspect that what has happened, and I'm not, I may be way off base, but I suspect that during the time when the federal money in LEA was coming in pretty good, they got several grants, and we're probably getting around the point where we're starting to pick them all up in general funds, and I would think that this would be one that we should take a long, hard look at it, because I don't believe they have enough work, or there is enough work for them to have full-time, five full-time employees.
You're the executive director, right?
Yes.
And you've got a research director on board right now and a sentencing analyst?
Yes.
Okay, so that's what their subcommittee is recommending deleting. And in addition to that, you've got two other employees, and what do they do?
An administrative assistant and a secretary. And I would like to have the opportunity to address Representative Freeman's comments.
Okay, yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay, I have been with the Judicial Council since July of 1974, so for most of the time that the Council has had staff of any sort, I've been part of that staff. In 1972 and 73, when Representative Freeman made his request and got the Judicial Council's budget doubled to $67,000, the situation was that we had free space in the court system. We paid $25 a month to the court system for our telephones. The court system did all of our accounting work. A good part of our secretarial work, provided us copy machines, provided all of our printing, paid all of our postage, and on and on and on. Basically, all of those items were absorbed by the court system, and the Judicial Council's money for FY 73 went to pay Bob Hicks as executive director and a half-time secretary. At that time also, when judges were selected, the council members did not receive, as far as I know, copies of the application. One thing that's happened in the intervening 9 years is that the judicial selection process has become far more extensive in terms of the amount of investigation that we do, in terms of the amount of public response that's made, in terms of the amount of materials that are provided to the Judicial Council members before each investigation and interview. And that alone takes a significant amount of the staff's time, especially in a year like last year where we had 10 judgeships. A year like this year where we've already done the public defender at Fairbanks District Court judgeship, are working on an Anchorage District Court judgeship, and Judge Hansen's Kenai replacement, and just finished the Juneau Superior Court position. So it's not even halfway through the year and we've already done five sets of nominations. In addition to the great increase in judicial selection work, there's also the fact that we now do the survey of the Bar Association. It's far more extensive, far more detailed, and we pay for that ourselves rather than having it done by the Bar Association, because we feel that we get much more reliable information. Thirdly, something happened in those intervening years. The court system needed the space that it had lent us. It didn't want to continue providing us with free telephone, free postage, free printing, free everything else. And so requested, or ordered basically, about a year and a half ago that we move to other quarters. Because a lot of our work involves being close to the court system, involves working with the courts, and because we still have a few ties left with the court system administratively, our office space is in an area close to the court system. But we pay for it ourselves, we pay for our copying machine, we pay for our printing, and all of those things, as you know, are expensive. I haven't ever gone back, and I've worked with the budget process for the last 5 years. I haven't really gone back to the year when we first started asking for operating costs to see what portion of our budget has changed, specifically because of the operating costs, but I could do that. As far as 5 full-time staff people, the 3, executive director, administrative assistant, and secretary, are necessary to handle just the judicial selection process. The research director and sentencing analyst are permanent positions. Their work is primarily judicial counsel research and sentencing research. Occasionally they get involved with the judicial selection process, but generally not.
Well, I've always thought these people did pretty good work, and one of the things that I think the public is real interested in, at least the last couple of years, maybe the last 5 years, is they feel that the quality of the judges is something of great concern. And I've really been happy with the increase in activity of the Judicial Council in terms of getting information out, not only to the people that make the decisions on the appointments of the judges, but also the public in terms of the general, you know, general public's knowledge of the judicial selection process, and also the when judges are up for retention elections and other things. And I think that, you know, those things, ever since I've been in Alaska up until recently, have just been, you just go and vote yes on the judge, and there's been no accountability to any to judges, and there's been nobody really, as far as I know, watching the store. And I think over the last 2 or 3 years that they've increased that activity. I don't know, I'm not saying that every dollar here is defendable, but as much as I know as much about this budget as I know about any other one, and it seems to me that they do real good work. And in fact, I was real enthused about some of the things that have been generated by the Judicial Council, such as in past years, the potential problem with disparities, or whatever, I can't remember the word, disparities, right, in sentencing and throughout the state, which I think is of great concern to us in a multicultural state. We have to make sure that there are those kind of problems. I'm still very concerned about that problem. I think to having some ongoing research in terms of what's going on with sentencing, what the kind of sentencing practices that are happening, and just in general, I wouldn't mind if the legislature wants to give more intense direction as to what kind of research this research director ought to undertake, and what kind of sentencing this sentencing analyst ought to analyze. But we definitely need more of it, not less. I think, in my opinion, I think we need a lot more of it. There seems to me to be tremendous problems in sentencing. When two guys enter the same store to commit the same crime, one guy just stands there and commits the robbery. The other guy not only commits the robbery, but beats up and rapes the clerk. He gets off with a suspended 5-year sentence. The other guy goes to jail for 3 years. I mean, that's just one example of something that the Violent Crime Committee ran into that is a cause of great concern, the differences between the judges. So I don't know. I don't really see that. I don't know about the dollars, Representative Freeman, but I think in terms of most of the positions we see, there is a need for this kind of activity. Maybe we want to be a little more certain about how we direct them. But
Mr. Chairman, can I add something further?
Okay, we're not going to spend much more time on this, so
okay.
I don't mean to be rude, but we've spent a lot of time on $250,000 here that I think a lot of people probably have their minds made up already, so.
Okay.
Please, if you could give us some final remarks, I'd appreciate it.
I just want to add that when I was appointed as executive director, the council asked that I spend a lot more time on looking into judicial selection and evaluation and things that can be done. On Wednesday, we reported to the Judiciary Committees a number of changes that we plan to make to involve the public more in both of those processes, and also pointed out that at this point we do begin to have enough sentencing data that that's one possibility for retention elections, that we can begin to evaluate judges and report publicly on sentencing patterns of each judge relative to an overall pattern.
Representative, two things in parting shot. Number one, the staff, the five people on board here, do not make the selection on the judges. Number two, Mr. Meekins, if you go back and check the record and see how many times the council has recommended against the retention of a judge and how many times they've been successful, you won't worry about that one anymore. It's almost automatic retention if they come out against them.
But I won't belabor this part.
Okay, I'm going to take about five here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Chairman, do you have anything else you wanted to cover on the court
system
budget?
Yes, just one more. I just have a couple. Andy and Arlene, that wanted to testify on one of the programs that the village plays, and if you'll come on up, and then we'll get right into the budget, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, now where is this?
Would be under line items 52-54, 152 and 154, but they're just statements on supportive of the program.
Okay.
Would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Andy Yabona. I'm the Executive Director of the Central Council of the Clinkin Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. I have with me Arlene Diltz, who's the criminal justice planner on our staff, and also Michael DeMann, who heads up our Economic and Social Development Division for the Central Council. I'm here today representing President John Hope, and we are here basically to offer some brief comments and support for the Village Public Safety Officer Program. The Clinkin Haida Central Council has been operating the VPSO project for the past 2 years. Initially, the Central Council provided the Village Public Safety Officer people for five communities through our CETA funding. But after the trainees became ineligible to be in those positions, we then worked with the Division of State Troopers to secure funding for five communities in Southeast Alaska. As you know, the VPSOs receive valuable training in a number of areas, including enforcement, water and boat safety, firefighting and prevention, and that sort of thing. We, as I mentioned, had five people that graduated from the Sitka Academy in February of 1981. We are very much in favor of the program because we feel that the services that are being provided to those rural communities that otherwise do not have public safety officers do receive that sort of assistance through this program. We would like to operate 10 to 12 additional people in the program this coming year. Hopefully, with the increase in the budget in this particular program, we probably would operate about 10 to 12, I believe. Through the efforts of Arlene Diltz over the past 3 years, she has developed a very good working relationship with the Division of State Troopers, and we feel that, again, this service is very valuable to the rural communities that otherwise would not have this service. I think with that, Mr. Chairman, again, we just would like to offer our support for the increasing funding for that particular program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The committee members are given a copy of some information here. On the back page of it is a projected budget July 1, 1981, June 30, 1982, and it shows, as I understand, this is an increase over current year. Maybe you could explain what this budget number represents compared with the present level of the program, or what this is.
Well, we during this last year got we contracted to to employ and train 5 village public safety officers, and we received $117,000. That was inadequate. We had a lot of administrative costs, so this year we included that in our budget projections. We hope to. What happened also is that we started off with salaries for village public safety officers at $1,000 per month. We have CETA people that were out there that were making more money than them. We thought it would be, or it would increase the program's effectiveness if we could pay the individuals in a manner consistent with the services that they were delivering. So what you see here is, although we're only doubling the number of village public safety officers, we're asking for about 3 times the money that we got under our initial contract.
Okay, the first question I have is, this $425,000, is that a total program cost or an increment for fiscal year 82?
That's a total program cost just for the Central Council. We handle only the salary and the per diem and travel. The training is handled by the Division of State Troopers and set up by them. So. And also the equipment is handled by the Division of State Troopers.
Okay.
The amount that we list here is just the amount that would be necessary for us to be able to administer an effective contract for the purposes of the salary and travel and per diem.
Chairman? In that last page item that shows the numbers, there's 2 items that I'd like to ask for a little elaboration on, because it seems to be the way they look at first glance here is it looks like they're parts of the same element. There's a $42,722 that's listed for teenage support personnel, and then at the bottom of the page there's $70,800 that apparently is indicated as overhead. So could you give us a little elaboration so we can understand what those were?
What page are you on?
Back page. On the last page.
I'm looking at this information provided the committee.
Okay, what happened during this last contract year, we had a overhead rate of 15%, and that was only of the 15% of the money actually spent on the village public safety officers. What happened as a result of their developing the contract that way was that we were unable to cover our own costs or expenses incurred while developing the contracts, working out the relationship with the communities, holding the meetings with the communities. It didn't cover the time of the person that was actually administering the contract and working with the communities and the state trooper. So the way that we thought we could address it this year would be to look at the time actually that an individual would actually spend administering the contract, unless that is a direct program expense, so that we would get that even if there was turnover in the village public safety officers. It would still require a person there at the central office administering the contract.
Okay. Well, let me try to ask the question again. In this page here, we have one item that's shown as support personnel, and then it includes part of a criminal justice planner, 2 clerical people, and that totals up to about $42,000. Then at the bottom of the page, we've got $70,000 calculated, 20% overhead rate. And what is overhead as contrasted with the $42,000?
The $70,000 would be just would cover the office space that would be required to actually house the planner and the 2 clerical people, and also would cover supportive services provided by the Central Council budget and the counties, their oxygen, telephone expenses, all of those types of things.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
How was this program run last year? I see that this budget is slightly different VPSO was about $3 million last year, and the governor has asked for a little less this year, but it's differentiated between administration contracts and direct support. What did they do last year, was it?
I have Commissioner Nix here, who didn't bring his pamphlet with him, but he will respond to your question, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Commissioner?
Oh, I can wait until...
Just from our point of view? Well, we had a cooperative working relationship. We had the contract to employ and provide for travel and per diem for the village public safety officers. Since we had the system intact, we work with the rural communities. And the Division of State Troopers set up all training and gave direction to the village public safety officer while they were actually working at the local level. And then the village public safety officer was actually considered a city employee. We were just there because we had the administrative system intact and the support system intact. We're there to offer no more than just assistance in making sure that the program was carried out effectively.
Well, it seems like the program has really expanded pretty quickly here. Better than 100% increase. No, I shouldn't say that. 11 new employees. And then in addition, the contract budget has increased
154.
Better than 100%.
What?
Am I looking at it wrong?
That's right. We were only able to work with five communities this year. There were within the first even 3 months, we were contacted by four other communities that had heard about the program, wanted to participate. They also didn't have any services available. So we think it's just justifiable to say we want to go from 5 to 10 communities and provide that service to all of those communities that have the need.
How extensive do you expect this finally to get to?
Well, we only have 12 communities at this point that I feel, have that need. They don't have any services available, and that's, the idea behind the program. One person that would provide all safety services, fill the gaps in the community.
This is only.
I don't know about up north, but these are our smaller communities. That would be it for us, I'm sure.
Mr. Chairman,
can I ask a question or two? I don't quite understand this. How? Let's say I'll probably name a community here for you pretty soon, but suppose they want one of the safety officers in the community. What do they do besides what they've done this time? Talk to me about it. How do we go about getting one of these public safety officers in the community in my district?
As soon as we find out how many communities we're going to be able to service this year, what we would do is send out a letter announcing it, and those letters are sent to the municipal offices. They're sent to especially in the rural areas where it's appropriate, Clinkett Haida Community Councils, IRE Councils, the A&B, A&S groups, and any community-based organization that we have contact with. And these are sent to all of our service communities, 18 communities in Southeast Alaska.
Let me be a little more specific. We've had, you may have read and know something about it. In Heidelberg, we've had some problems lately.
Right.
And I talked to me about it. I suggested that maybe the public safety officer, village public safety officer, would be the best way for us to go rather than try to get a full-time troop.